Hey, this is Sayem Bhutani, and you're listening to Chai Time Data Science, a podcast for data science enthusiasts where I interview practitioners, researchers, and cagglers about their journey, experience, and talk all things about data science. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Chai Time Data Science Show. In this episode, I interview a data scientist, but from the other side of the world, a data scientist at Kaggle, Walter Reed, also known as Inversion famously on Kaggle. Walter, I believe, was the first Kaggle discussions grandmaster. And in this interview, we talk all about his journey into data science and on Kaggle, how his journey into data science started via Kaggle and his journey now on the other side of Kaggle while working as a data scientist for the team. Walter holds a PhD in chemical engineering. This interview also talks a lot about the science in data science, how Walter has approached problems over the years, and also what does data science on the other side of Kaggle look like. I feel this is a very special interview in the sense that this time it's a Kaggle Grandmaster that is a part of Kaggle's team. So I'm really excited to be sharing this interview. Without further ado, here's my interview with Dr. Walter Reed. Please enjoy the show. And for the audience, as a quick reminder, please remember to subscribe to my newsletter. You can find the link in the description of this podcast if you'd like to stay updated with the interview releases. And if you're a non-native English speaker, please remember to go to YouTube and enable the subtitles for a better watching experience. For now, here's the conversation. Please enjoy the show. Hi everyone, it's a privilege for me to be talking to the first discussions grandmaster ever. Now he's on the other side of Kaggle, but I'm on the call with Dr. Walter Reed. Thank you so much, Walter, for joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to be here and answer your questions.
Likewise, I'm really excited. But before we talk about Kaggle and your work before joining Kaggle, I want to talk about your background, because you did PhD in chemical engineering, and you followed, if I may, a traditional path in research. Could you tell us what made you pick chemistry as a career path and take up research in that domain?
Yeah. So I like telling this story, not because it's particularly interesting, but it just kind of highlights the fact that in today's world, you really can reinvent yourself. And So I did a master's and a PhD in chemical engineering. My master's was basically in understanding reaction rates of burning carbon particles. It was experimental as well as modeling. I enjoyed that. And then for my PhD, I did, it was 100% computationally based, and it was understanding the mechanisms of coagulating particles in turbulent fluid.
Okay.
So the traditional path, this part almost sounds unreal, but, and it's kind of ridiculous. When I was in high school a long time ago, the mid 80s. And just to give you an idea for how things were different, my first computer had 2 kilobytes of RAM. I upgraded it to 16 kilobytes of RAM, which was kind of a big deal. And I had taken a Pascal class in high school, so I really like programming, and I wanted to go into computers. But when I was getting close to graduating, literally everyone I knew was, I'm going into computers. And I, being the genius high school student that I was, I thought, well, the market will be completely saturated and there won't be any jobs by the time I graduate. Right? Okay. So probably the same thought process that data scientists who are going into school are thinking, well, all the jobs will be gone. So I ended up studying chemical engineering for literally the only reason that I thought it sounded really cool, chemical engineering. Woo. I had no idea what it was.
You wanted to rebel against the prevalent sentiment.
Exactly. So, you know, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. It was challenging. Obviously, I went on to get three degrees, and it gave me a fairly good career path. So that's kind of my background, and the idea that oftentimes your path is not as well defined as you think it's going to be. Kind of life, you just go with how life hands to you, and you adjust as needed.
Yeah. Now, when did machine learning start to come into the picture for you, and what even made you being attracted to machine learning?
Yeah. So this is another thing I think back. So in early 2000s, 2001, 2002, the company I worked for had distance learning classes that you could take. So this was before Coursera. And the distance learning classes were university professors, and they would record their lectures on DVD, and they would mail you the DVDs. You would watch the DVDs at home. You would do the homework. You would email them the homework. They would grade it. So it was like, you know, Quora Coursera. It was before Coursera, you know, but very, very clunky. And I took this class called Computational Intelligence. And it was what was really hot back then, fuzzy logic, which, okay, you know, not really hot. It was genetic algorithms, and it was neural networks. And I really enjoyed the course, and particularly the final project was we had these little 80 by 120 black and white images of soda cans, pop cans. Okay. And we had to classify which pop, was it a Dr. Pepper, was it a Pepsi? And I was blown away that a computer could learn to recognize these images. Now, what was interesting about this is, you know, we actually didn't write neural networks for this final project. The professor gave us his pre-compiled Windows binary that we ran on our single core machines. And it was still extremely hard to have it was always diverging. So just getting it to actually train and predict was the challenge. Now, after that, I spent years and years looking for opportunities to apply these tools, but there was just such a gap between what they were able to do and any real world problems. So I kind of just gave up and like, this really doesn't solve any real world problems, which it really didn't back then. But it planted the seed that, you know, this is kind of some cool stuff that's going on.
So it seems like you were always ahead of the curve, even in school. Now, Kaggle didn't exist in 2001. When did you discover Kaggle? And I know you became addicted to it. How did that journey start?
So it was in 2012, and I stumbled upon a competition, and I don't remember how. I don't know if it was an ad or a press release or whatnot, but it was for the Merck Molecular Challenge. In 2012. And the idea was they gave just a huge number, like 10,000 molecular descriptors, and you had to predict basically the molecular activity. Okay. And I'm a chemical engineer. I thought I was really good at data analysis. The top prize was $25,000. I was convinced this was going to be the easiest money that I ever made in my life. Right? Just like everyone who joins Kaggle, like, you know, I'm going to win the $1 million. And in this competition, this is one that Jeff Hinton and his team won in 2012, right? Using just to show that neural networks were kind of, you could apply them to real problems. I did really poorly. Out of the 300 and something teams, I ended up coming 23rd from the bottom of the leaderboard.
Oh, okay.
Right? So, you know, people go and it's like Kaggle's hard. Yeah, it was not only hard, it was like embarrassing. I was upset. I kind of crushed my view that I knew how to do data analysis. And that was, in my opinion, a really good thing, because what it taught me was there were all of these tools, new tools that I just had no idea existed. And it really did light a fire under me to, you know, get better and to learn these tools. And that was really what started my journey. So it was both the interestingness of it, as well as the, I was, a little upset that I couldn't do well in these things that led me to enter quite a few competitions.
You accepted the challenge served by Kaggle.
Yeah. Yep. but with a lot of fear and trepidation and intimidation and self-doubt and, my guess is what tons of people who join Kaggle feel, it's like, okay, it seems like I succeeded, but it was a rough journey to start.
Now, you were active as a competitor for quite a long time. And I actually checked your profile. You competed in 84% competitions in a solo, which is without a team. Can you tell us more about your competitive journey? And if you have any favorite, what I like to call battle stories from the competitions.
Yeah. So, it's interesting when you look at my numbers, if you scroll through my competitions, a lot of them were solo and a lot of them weren't really good, but I tended to enter every single competition that was launched. And of course, it's very difficult to focus on two or even three competitions. So what I would tend to do is I would join every competition. I would start it, see if it was fun, see if I was doing well, and then kind of just like jettison the ones that weren't. In terms of joining the team, yeah, I didn't do a lot of team competing. And one of the reasons is I didn't feel like I was worthy to join another team and drag them down all the way down the leaderboard. And again, that's another mental a block that I had. It took me a few competitions before I did anything that I would be proud of on the leaderboard. And once I started doing that, then it was like, okay, now I'm really, really addicted because, okay, I can actually get better and you see the progress. The teams that I were on were really meaningful. Personally, I did some very large teams. I did some small. It was always the one or two people team, like the one or two people that I joined with that were the most rewarding. The ones that were larger, typically not as fun. Okay. So battle stories. We were disqualified from one competition that was a two-stage competition because the team leader was doing things until the very last minute and missed the model upload timeline by 16 seconds. So there's a deadline. You had to upload your stage one model. We missed it by 16 seconds. And well, we're disqualified from that competition. It's a funny story. I don't want to give too many details, but I was working with somebody who was very, very good at neural networks, studying them in a PhD program, but couldn't cross-validate didn't understand cross-validation and how you were supposed to do it. So there's all these just fun little things that, as I look back, are fun to reminisce on.
Did you check later if you would have won the competition had they made the 16-second deadline?
I probably did. And I probably didn't do that well. So maybe, I didn't feel really, really badly.
Okay. You were also the first discussions grandmaster, and this was achieved by you after they redid the rankings, which meant that you were already very active in discussions. Unlike people like me who aim to become a grandmaster because it's already there, you were active by yourself. Could you tell us about your community journey and what led you to being so active there?
Yeah. So I joined Kaggle, and then I joked with Anthony Goldblum that I was working for Kaggle for 5 years before. And I need back pay. So I came to Kaggle very intimidated that I was the only one that didn't know what he was doing, which of course is false. Most of us don't know what we're doing. So it was very tentative to start participating in the forums. But once I did, it was a very good experience. Kaggle, if you think of your online communities, Kaggle is amazing in the sense of people. It's strange because it's competitive, but yet people are willing to help and give ideas and suggestions and help you forward. So that became very rewarding. Then the other thing, I kind of joke, but it's not true. Anytime when I was doing my real job, I was bored. I would just go onto the Kaggle forums and participate. And the fact that I had 1,200 forum posts suggests that I avoided my real job quite a bit over those years. But I look at our forums and it's really is a sense of pride. When I joined Kaggle, there have been others that have really stepped up to the plate. You've interviewed some of those people who have just become incredible resources to the community. It's really neat to see that.
I think like you said, sorry.
The one thing I would say is, no matter where you are in your journey, if somebody's helped you, when you get to the point where you can help somebody answer a question, just like try paying it forward as quickly as possible. And once you start doing that in that mindset, you don't have to be the top. You can, just be above 2%, then start helping that 2%. When you get to 5%, help the, that 4% and keep doing that. And that'll get you where you need to be.
It's not just rewarding in terms of upwards, but also the community starts to recognize you and you start to see those familiar little icon or faces that always become active. And it's also a warm and welcoming community in that sense, if I may.
Yeah.
Now, coming to community, do you have any favorite moments from the discussions, any favorite, again, stories that you'd like to mention?
Yeah, so I thought of a few, but unfortunately, a lot of them were kind of like controversial and drama. And so I don't necessarily want to focus on those, but they do stick to my mind. There was an incident where there was a very, very, very well-respected, kind-hearted, I don't know if he was a grandmaster at the time, but very high-ranked, who had passed away, and the outpouring of support towards this individual, again, reinforced what a wonderful community we have. I mentioned the support and the sharing, but on top of that, the Kaggle community does a good job of keeping it lighthearted. So we do get in our little fights and spats and arguments, but for the most part, there's not a lot of posturing and politics. It's people wanting to learn and it's people also having fun. So it's that combination that I really enjoy.
Okay. Now, once you became active on Kaggle, after that, you made a switch into a machine learning role, which I believe many people even look for when they're signing up on Kaggle. Can you tell us more about the transition and how was Kaggle helpful in helping you make that transition?
Yeah. So I spent about 15 years in industry and it was, the jobs were fine, but I missed that kind of intellectual challenge that you had in grad school. And I think so many people are in that spot. And, so Kaggle was, for me, was a way to, have that be learning something that's fun, but solving a problem and doing something that I thought was really interesting to work on. And probably about 3 years when I started to rise in the Kaggle ranks, I had mentioned to my boss, that I did Kaggle and I had these skills, and he was really supportive. Like he would tell other directors and people. And so I kind of, within the company I was working for, which is consumer products, I started to get a little bit of a reputation. And it was interesting because it opened some doors to work with various teams that were struggling solving some problems with data. And I was able to do a few side projects like this, working with teams. And what I found was curious was, oftentimes they would start explaining their project. And because I had done so many Kaggle competitions, I would be like, oh, right. So what you need to do is this, 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 because this is going to be a problem. So if we, and they'd be like, how do you know this? It's like, well, because I did 3 EEG problems. So I understand how to do the signal processing or whatnot. So, when I talk about Kaggle, it's one of the few places that you can explore so many different types of machine learning problems, right? So I think that's a plus. So I started doing side projects, but it was very slow going. And like I said, after about 3 years, I really wanted to, I made the decision, I'm going to do machine learning and data science. It's like, that's going to be my career either here or somewhere else. And so I spent about 6 months, literally every day, looking at all the new job postings.
Okay.
And again, this fits into this intimidation and, I'm not worthy. And so I really wanted to see what people were posting, see if I had the skills, and I finally pulled the trigger. The first one, I didn't pass the phone interview. I completely screwed up some question about Python classes. It was an easy question. I just didn't do a lot of coding with classes.
Okay.
Just parenthetically, we ran a competition with this company that rejected me within the last year. So it was, it was kind of funny. So then I started, you know, over time getting better at Kaggle, and two companies reached out to me, and I was going through the interview process with both of these and very, very close to sealing the deal. And then I got a promotion at my current company. And the idea was that it was this role, but I'd be able to apply some of the machine learning. I thought, oh, you know, this is a great opportunity for me. And so that kind of sidelined going to these other companies, and which was actually a good thing, because I think if I had joined these other two companies, I would have passed on the Kaggle opportunity.
Okay. How did the dots then connect for you? You later joined Kaggle. What was the story there?
So this was in the fall of 2016, and then in the spring of the next year, 2017, you know, about 6 months later, the job was, I was not doing the machine learning that I thought I would be doing. It was like, you know, months and months of battling with IT to even get like a GPU to do neural network training. So I would do my training at home and take the model to work. Right. So it was really frustrating. And it was like, again, it's like, do I want to spend all my time doing the political battles? On my birthday in April, I got an email from Anthony Goldblum. They said that, you know, we've been acquired by Kaggle or by Google, and so now we're expanding our data science team. And you know, would you like to apply? And I was having dinner with my wife and my daughter, and I got this email, and so I was like super excited. And I read this to my family. And my daughter, who was 16 at the time, says, "Dad, that sounds like a scam. I just delete the email." So that kind of, I was more than happy to. So then Anthony told me about the Google interview process, and he said, but don't worry, we'll send you, there's a book you can study up on. And I got the book. It was 700 pages, Cracking the Coding Interview.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, this fear and intimidation, this whole imposter, I'm not worthy syndrome kicked in. And I had actually drafted a letter to Anthony giving all of these really bad excuses, reasons why I wasn't gonna do the interview or, you know, go through the process. But I decided, you know what, this, I'm gonna kick myself if I pass this up. I went through the process and ended up doing okay, working at Kaggle.
Can you tell us more about your current role? What parts of the operations do you handle?
So Kaggle is, you know, we have a lot of engineers who are working on making notebooks and kernels and data sets and all of that. The data science team is really broken up into two parts. We have our program managers and we have our data scientists. The program managers handle all the inbound leads. By the way, Kaggle gets far more inbound leads than we can manage. Most of those are, this isn't going to make a good competition, but the ones that are, so they work with them and kind of help them understand what needs to happen. We get sample data from them. Once we get the sample data, then the data scientists kick in. So, you know, that's me, Sawyer Dane, Phil Culleton, and Will Kukurski. We basically say, is this a good problem? Is the data public? Is the data set large enough? Is there leakage? We kind of go through that and ultimately prepare the data for the competition. So it's, you know, one of the things I really liked about Kaggle competitions is how modular it was. So, you know, you do a PhD program, it's 4 years or longer working on one problem. Kaggle, it's like, if you get sick of the competition, you get 3 months and you're done. You get another competition. And it's the same thing with the work that we do. Is it does overlap, you know, quite a bit, but, you know, we get to work on all sorts of interesting problems, whether it's, you know, signal data, astronomical data, whales, you name it. We work on it.
And if I dare say, you also get to know all of the cutting edge research or applications that are there in the industry if you're working on a domain specific competition.
Yeah. And that's actually funny too, because you know, I look at the people who, I'll give you an example, the recent quantum chemistry atomic coupling one. I look at what people did, and I'm like, oh, I don't understand sequence models. It highlights the gap of what I don't know when you look at what the winners are doing. I kind of believe no matter where you're at, you're always going to feel like there's such a large gap between you and what you need to know. But to your point, being able to see what people are doing and know what they're doing so that if I were to work on a type of problem, you know at least where to look. I think that's a very valuable resource to have on Kaggle.
That's very true. Also, currently you're a developer, advocate, a data scientist, and even active in the community. If you were to pick your favorite tasks of your everyday, which one do you enjoy the most?
Yes. So in terms of the community, if you look at my stance, it really hasn't changed over the years. And I view Kaggle as one of the best places to learn machine learning and data science. The things that work, the leaderboard doesn't lie. You know, there's things you can say, well, you're just ensembling to get, that's true. But the reality is you have to produce good models. You have to iterate quickly. And in terms of a free resource where you can go and get your hands dirty on all sorts of problems, there isn't a better place. So my favorite thing is when we have these pockets of drama and people are upset, and often rightly for real reasons, of just being able to take a step back and say, hey, look at what we have and look at what it provides. To me, that I do enjoy that because I look at what Kaggle has taught me and provided me. I'm just in awe. And by the way, 2012, when I started Kaggle, that's when Coursera also launched. And, you know, back in the, so when I was a kid, there was no Google. If you didn't know something, you had to go to the library. Okay. And then, you know, if I, mid-career, if I wanted to take a distance ed course, somebody had to email me DVDs. And then we had Coursera where you could take Andrew Ng's course for free.
Yeah.
So, you know, I view these things as just absolutely amazing, democratizing these things to anyone who has the interest and drive and motivation to do it. And so I love taking a step back and looking at the higher view.
I think the sentiment is also, we were just talking about this, but reflected in the community as well. People, no matter where they are in the leaderboard or no matter in what hierarchical position they are, they'll always go ahead and share all sorts of amazing information and write-ups during, after, before the competitions even.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things, so Addison Howard is one of our project managers. And what he started doing was writing these summary emails, listing out, here's all of the summaries, here's all of the top kernels. And you look at that and you're like, oh my, what is being shared is just amazing. You know? So, yeah. And again, I'm working at Kaggle, but just seeing that summary is like, wow.
It's if I may say this, in 3 months, the community comes together, creates this plethora of resources, of kernels, of discussions, and later even solutions that if you go through, you can learn much more than at least what I learned during my college days.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely, for sure.
Now, about competitions, I can unfortunately speak very little about competing because I only competed in a few numbers. But to talk about the other side of hosting the competitions, can you give us some insider about what efforts go into hosting a competition? Is it just download the data and upload it for you, or are there other things that we as competitors miss?
Yeah. One of the things that absolutely blew me away was how many possible leakage vectors there are in data. And I for the bits of leakage. So if you're a competitor, it seems like all the competitions have leakage. That is like a little drop out of the swimming pool of leakage that we got rid of before we launched the competition. You know, you think of images and you have to look at the metadata, the different types of camera, the image size, and the thing is, you know, there's one data scientist who's scrutinizing this. And then we launch the competition and you have 2,000 data scientists who are scrutinizing it. So that thing alone really does keep us up at night, trying to think of all the different ways that not only the data can have leakage, but also be abused in some sort of way. Then the other challenge is, some sponsors are absolutely fantastic. Some have these weird ideas of the types of metrics we should use that are really kind of not very good metrics and will drive the wrong behavior. So there's also a component where we have to kind of use soft skills to convince hosts or sponsors to, do things differently.
Okay. Now, again, talking about the other side of competing, which is actually competing in competitions, can you tell us about your favorite competition that you competed in? And do you miss being active on competitions now because you're not as active as you used to be earlier?
Yeah, so absolutely. I joke, but I'm serious. The day I leave Kaggle, whether I get fired or, whether I retire or whatever, I'll compete again because I find it so rewarding.
Okay.
My favorite one was, I had three competitions where I didn't do so well, the first and then a couple after. And then the fourth one I did was the acquired shopper value. And the idea was you're given a year's worth of purchases from a person. And the idea was, okay, we're going to send these people a coupon. So the data is on people who got the coupon. Predict which ones would, and they all redeem the coupon. Predict which ones would then continue to buy the product. In other words, you want to send it to the people who are going to be most valuable for this coupon. And the reason it was my favorite was because there was about 1,000 competitors, and I was about 500, so like middle of the road. I was using logistic regression because that was the only thing I knew how to use at the time, right? That was it. That was my tool for binary classification. And I started doing a lot of EDA, and I saw this thing in the data, and I realized if I took these kind of this group out and trained separate models on these groups, that so I jumped from 500 to 50, just boom, just doing that one little insight, and I ended up 32nd. So that was my favorite just because it was so exhilarating to suddenly do well and to realize that I wasn't working any harder. I was just had an insight in the data. I found that very rewarding, very motivating, and that, again, helped keep me addicted to Kaggle.
Were you still using logistic regression in your final 32nd position solution?
Yeah. No, it was, I think my computer had 8 megabytes or gigabytes of RAM at the time. I barely knew any Python. I may have actually even been using like an old copy of MATLAB at the time because that's all I had.
Okay.
Right. There was this time where I started using some commercial software that I had and then MATLAB and realizing, well, this isn't going to cut it. And so that's, I had to learn Python. Then I realized, well, my computer's not going to cut it. So, you kind of do this journey of I got to improve my tools. I have to improve my knowledge set. And that was very early at the time where I didn't have very, very many tools.
Okay. Now, again, to go back and summarize your journey, you started competing on Kaggle after taking a few courses. Then you switched into machine learning / data science role, and then you joined Kaggle. Now, to people who are just signing up on Kaggle, looking at this journey or a journey similar to this, what parts do you think we are missing? What parts might they miss being a data science newbie or data science enthusiast or newbie Kaggler?
Yeah, what I experienced, 7 years ago about being intimidated, it's only gotten worse, right?
For sure.
it's only gotten worse for a number of reasons. Number one, Kaggle is a much bigger place. So whereas 900 teams was big 7 years ago, now we're almost, there are competitions where we have almost 9,000 teams. So there's that. The fact that data science has exploded so much, 7 years ago, if you were using a random forest, you were cutting edge, you were, XGBoost, that was the high tech. Now it's like XGBoost, right? That's like the baseline. And then it's even worse if you think of all of the neural network type architectures that seem just to come out like mad, right? It's hard to keep up with them. So here's the one let me give a tip that I think is very appropriate is, even 7 years ago, even back then, I realized you can't learn it all at once. You can't learn it all, and especially you can't learn it all. So I would join competitions, not necessarily to win, but what did I need to learn next? So like, okay, I need to learn convolutional neural networks. I would join a competition and I would just focus on learning convolutional neural networks. I didn't care if I, where I placed, right? Mm-hmm. Top 30 or whatever. I tried to do well. And I think that's the most important thing, is forget what's going on and look at yourself and say, I don't know how to do random forests. Okay. Enter a tabular and just say, I'm just going to learn how to do random forests. I'm going to learn how to cross validate. I'm going to learn sklearn. I'm going to, you know, and just do that. And then make a plan and then take the next step. But it's really easy to go, oh, everyone's doing XGBoost. Learn random forests, then learn XGBoost. And it's very, it takes a lot of self-control, because you want to, like, there's always the shiny toy. I remember back when neural networks were starting to get more active on people say, well, I tried this neural network, didn't work. What neural network are you using? I'm using Lasagna. I'm using Keras, which it's like, no, that's, you're chasing the wrong thing.
Right? Yeah. And when do you suggest one should jump onto a competition? Should they complete a PhD in chemistry or do a few courses or just jump in?
I think it's good for sure to know the basics. The tools in data science have become much more push button. And that's a good thing, but it's also important to not skip at least the fundamentals, like understand what's going on, how's logistic regression work and what's gradient descent and how does the decision tree work? And okay, so how do you go from that to a random forest to XGBoost? I think you don't need to know be able to derive the equations or write the code, but you need to understand the fundamentals. I've seen some well-meaning people use some very powerful tools and really burn themselves because they didn't understand the basics.
Okay. And once someone joins a new competition, how should they go about it? And do you have any suggestion on what competitions to join, to team up or not team up, what approaches to take? Should they just copy and fork the top ranking kernel during that time?
Ooh, nah. So first of all, I would say do what you're comfortable with. If you're new, I would recommend not teaming with somebody that you know already. Don't join and say, I just want to team up with somebody, because you don't know who that person is or what they can contribute. So I would, approach it as a way to get yourself comfortable. Don't worry where you place. If you know somebody, team with them, like especially if you're co-located, you can work together as a team and kind of help and explore different things. The most important thing is don't worry. Like, it took me 4 competitions before I started to do halfway decent. Like, no one goes and wins their first competition. It's happened actually. But it's very, very rare. In terms of should I fork a kernel, if all you care about, ooh, I can get high on the leaderboard by forking a kernel, don't do it. I would recommend that you approach the problem and write your own very simple code, like the bare minimum. I'm going to write the bare minimum. I'm going to, no feature engineering. Let me just process the data and see how that does. Kind of like a naive dummy model. I would do that. The exception, if the data requires a lot of pre-processing, then I think it's fine to swipe some code, right? Some people do some excellent, here's some pre-processing. But otherwise, no, I would just start from scratch and see how far you get. And then later, you can start incorporating what other people are doing. But I wouldn't just swipe and start with theirs. I would start with yours and pull from other people's and build it into yours. That's what I would recommend.
Okay. And this is a stupid question, but do you think one can learn data science by competing? And this originates from the opinion that, hey, Kaggle's not data science opinion, that's now trending slightly on social media.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to say Kaggle's not data science because you have to define what data science is, and is data science putting models into production? Is data science, writing algorithms? Is data science cleaning your data? And if data science was working with organizations to get their legacy systems and clean up their data, there's no fun in that, right? Kaggle is the fun part of data science, in my opinion. There's plenty of other skills that are important to know and to learn. But it's Kaggle is to me the most critical, right? You learn how not to overfit. You learn how to quickly do exploratory data analysis, how to write quick models, baseline models. Can you learn data science? I would say that absolutely you will learn what works in data science. I have read a lot of papers and tried to implement them, and they don't work very well. Kaggle is ruthless. If it works, people are going to use it. If it doesn't work, they're not going to use it. So if you want to learn what works in data science, that's where Kaggle is really helpful. There's things that aren't helpful. Ensembling 20 models isn't very helpful. But I've talked to some grandmasters who do very well, and they say, I will make one neural network model and focus on feature engineering, and then I'll do one tree-based model, focus on feature engineering, and I'll ensemble those two models, and they do very well. Because they focus on the feature engineering and understanding the problem.
Do you think there are any aspects that maybe a data science learner might miss while just competing on Kaggle, and how can they fulfill them if there are any?
Yeah, so for sure, most machine learning people are data science, when they go to a real corporation, there's this reality of you end up spending more time in meetings and talking about what you're going to do and how you get access. Of course, you don't get that on Kaggle. Kaggle does tend to give you a much more encapsulated, cleaner problem with a defined question. I think in the real world, you have to think through what question are we trying to answer, and how do we best answer that, and what's the data we need to answer that, and what's, do we need more, do we need less? So those are very, very important skills that you're not going to develop on Kaggle because we give you the problem.
Okay. Now, my final question to you would be, do you have any best advice, as if I may, the official representative of Kaggle, for any newbie Kagglers who are just getting started on competing or just learning via Kaggle?
Yeah. The theme I've been saying of just suppress that anxiety and fear and intimidation and inadequacy, suppress that. I felt it 7 years ago. I still feel it when I see the top Kaggler solutions. I'm like, oh, when I compete again, I'm competing against this. And just go and have fun. And I promise, you will be rewarded by what you learn, even if you never win a gold medal, even if you just, win some bronze and some silver, what you learn will be useful. And hopefully you'll have a great time. You'll be hard pressed to find a community that is more supportive of you as a newcomer, as somebody who, it may not know everything. So jump into the community, have fun, help other people. And then when you start doing good, pay it forward and help the people who have just joined Kaggle.
Awesome. Before we end the call, can you mention the platforms where we can follow you and follow your work?
Oh, sure. I'm Twitter. Let's see. I think Walter Reed without a dot. Walter Reed is probably the main place that I post stuff. I'm intermittent. Sometimes I post a lot. Sometimes I don't. That's probably the best place. Feel free to tag me on the forums at Inversion. I'll just say, so that name does not come from any mathematical theory. People also go, I like to ride roller coasters in my spare time. So, roller coasters have inversions. So if there's anything I can do to help, let me know.
Awesome. Is that the story behind your username, Inversion?
That is exactly behind my username. I tend to get into these hobbies and go kind of hog wild. And there was one year I went to 14 different amusement parks and rode 86 different roller coasters. And I was making like maps that had pins on them where the roller coasters were. So on a business trip, I could make sure I got to a park. And I was very, very into roller coasters.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much, Walter, for this very honest opinion and very insightful opinion about Kaggle and your journey. And thank you so much for joining me on the Chai Time Data Science podcast.
Yeah. Thank you so much for giving the opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed the show, please be sure to give it a review or feel free to shoot me a message. You can find all of the social media links in the description. If you like the show, please subscribe and tune in each week to Chai Time Data Science.